welcome to Yada Yada Radio. Grandpa here. I just got my granddaughter to sleep. I am babysitting by myself tonight, which is puts me right out there at the edge of my capability. How are you guys doing?
Great. Doing good.
Oh, good. Yeah, my
peachy.
My son and daughter-in-law brought over my 6-month-old granddaughter and said they wanted to go out on a date tonight. And so I have been watching her, and I just managed to get her to bed. Yep, she seems to be doing fine. I'm really out of practice, though. Boy, I tell you, all the stuff that I used to do just casually. I am certain I'm not going to win Grandpa of the Year Award, although it was fun this evening. It's much easier.
You give me a run for my money. I had both my grandkids here for 3 days, and I was like, damn, I raised 4 of these guys. You know, wow.
How did I do that?
Yeah, it was maniac day. I couldn't, I don't know. You got to grow into that kind of thing. You can't just fall on top of you, I think. You know?
Yeah, I agree with you. I need to step aside here for about 20 seconds and 30 seconds. Let me take care of something. I'll be right back, okay? Go ahead, guys.
Okay.
What's the good word from Florida?
Well, another banner week over here business-wise, and I've been doing a lot of sharing on FB this week, too, which has been enjoyable. I've been able to do the both at the same time, which I hadn't been able to do lately. I made a number of notes, you know, tying Benjamin and he that is lowly and little and Sheol, you know, all to the beast, and putting this stuff out there and watching people just disregard it, basically, for the most part, other than, you know, the usual suspects that are game to learn. You know.
Yeah. Good. How
well, guys, life sometimes gets in the way of life.
Fun.
But I am back with you. I wanted to return to Psalm 91, where we were about the 14th verse. We did cover a little bit in the observations program this morning. The part that I just kind of want to backtrack to, Kirk, that you and I covered, is two things. One is that Yah is specifically saying that the way that he takes care of his family, those who are engaged in and doing his business, which is to expose and condemn religious and political institutions and to convey his testimony, which is almost as irritating to people, maybe more irritating to people than simply condemning religion and politics. But his specific technique for doing so is to use Moloch. And I had always kind of chafed a bit at all the references Yahweh had to Yahweh of the Shabbat. I just translated a passage in 2 Samuel today that said that it was Yahweh, God of the Shabbat. And, you know, the Shabbat is always translated host, or heavenly host. And you know, we recognize they're the Moloch, and they're in a command and control regimen, and they're essentially Yahweh's spiritual implements. And I always say, yeah, he's God, for crying out loud. If he's going to have a credential, you know, why not say God, creator of the universe, or Yahweh, the architect of life, or Yahweh, the author of the covenant? Why does he say Yahweh of the Shabbat? Now, Kirk, you know, because I shared it with you during the observations program, but JB, you and Larry, do you know why he says that? Why would he even mention it, since it's, you know, on a 1 to 10 scale, it appears to be a 0 in importance compared to his Torah? You know, I'm Yahweh of the Torah, I'm Yahweh of the prophets, I'm Yahweh of Israel, I'm Yahweh of the covenant, I'm Yahweh of creator of the universe, I'm Yahweh God. You know, why would he constantly
I think it speaks specifically to being in another dimension. That's what I think that might be. But that's just a step.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. JB, got anything to add to that?
No, that was kind of the same thing I was thinking. Is it just shows that elevated level?
Yeah, what the deal is here, and it was, I'm sure I'm not going to explain it as well as Roy wrote it, but right after I was translated, I opened one of Roy's letters that he had written on behalf of an individual who was questioning Yah's timing, and he was trying to explain time to this individual, and he did a marvelous job of explaining time, basically saying that if that in each dimension, time is perceived differently. Like if we're in a in the fourth dimension or fifth dimension, and we're looking at an individual or life in three dimensions, that life in three dimensions is going to just like look like it's zipping by, because there's the greater the amount of energy. The greater amount of mass, the greater amount of speed, all those things slow time. So from our perspective, let's say that we are in the fifth dimension. From our perspective in the fifth dimension, looking down at this four-dimensional universe, we're in infinitely more speed, power, capability. And so as we're looking down at this lesser universe, it's going to be looking like it's zipping by because our time is just flowing more slowly.
Yeah, which he explains even in the Mizmor, where he talks about that. Well, a thousand years for one guy is a night in another guy. So
that's right. Yeah, exactly.
Frame
and
of reference.
That is the concept here. So as we are considering this, the idea was that a seven-dimensional entity cannot enter a six-dimensional universe. It's just like Walt Disney can't go and hang out with Mickey Mouse. The only way that Walt Disney can interact with Mickey Mouse is via some very specific implements: a pencil, a pen, a paintbrush, and some pigments. And with that pen and pencil, he can move Mickey around. He can create an environment for Mickey, and he can create dialogue for Mickey Mouse. But if the implements that he's able to use to translate his three-dimensional nature into Mickey's two-dimensional world.
Right.
Now, God is seven-dimensional. We're in at very best a six-dimensional universe, probably a six-dimensional universe. We can only perceive three of it because we're stuck in time. And so the way that Yahweh interacts with us is via his implements. What are his implements?
Spirits.
The Shabbat, right? The Malachi comprised the Shabbat. And so, since that is his principal way of interacting with us, that's his principal way of protecting us, keeping us safe, dealing with his family, and doing the things that he needs done, because while he is very hands-off and pro-choice and pro-free will, this is, the universe is not a start it up and leave it alone fish tank. It's not like back in the days where you were a bachelor and you had a fish tank and you say, if I don't change the water, if I don't fix the filter, if I don't feed the fish, it'll be okay. The universe isn't like that. It takes interaction. So the implements that Yahweh uses to do what he wants done in the six-dimensional universe that he created are his Saba. So he repeats it constantly because that's how he interacts with us. We can listen to him. We can engage with him in conversation by way of his Torah and reading it. We can be enlightened by his spirit, empowered by his spirit, but his principal way of dealing in this universe is via the Saba. That's why he constantly says it. Yahweh wanted to deal with Lot and Sodom and Gomorrah, what he sent to Malach. Mm-hmm. When Yahweh wanted to report on what the conditions were in various places, what did he do? He sent his Malach. When Yahweh wanted to convey a message to Daniel in Babylon, the one place that God's not going, what did he do? He sent a Malach.
Yeah, he used Gabriel. Yeah.
Right.
Go ahead, Craig.
Just going to say, Yahweh is saying that It's the that it's his Moloch that he has instructed to take care of us when we're engaged in his mission. And you could say, well, why isn't? Because, you know, the religious view is God's doing everything. I mean, he's answering prayers. He's engaged in our life. He's introducing us to pretty girls and helping us win the lottery and do well on tests.
He's
just in, right, everything. And what God is saying, listen, even with my family, well, I can convey and implement my will, but the means that I do it is with the Moloch. So it's a very powerful understanding of how we're interacting with God. But the other part of it I think is so interesting is when you look at the chasm of difference as you go up in dimensions is how far we will go, how far he's going to take us. So that we, when we are in the seventh dimension and we're looking down at our three-and-a-half-dimensional sandbox, I mean, we're just going to go, oh, my goodness. And we thought that was pretty special. You know, look how much more magnificent all this is.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's hard to fathom, really. But, yeah, I did read some of that. I read that. And what it is, there's a fellow that's convinced Yahweh has already had his seventh day, and he's just not getting that. The seventh day of rest is yet to come. That's all.
Right. Yeah, and you know, well, Yahweh, through his Moloch, most certainly has seen and can see any aspect of our future.
It's like looking at the book.
There are aspects
read
of
the
our
end
future.
Sure.
Right. Yeah, there are aspects of our future that I think, I mean, many aspects, I think he chooses not to see. For example, I am convinced that he knows exactly what's going to happen in the 5 days between Kippurim and Sukkah in year 6000 Yah. And he has shared many of the things that are going to happen in terms of the millennial kingdom. But I think a lot of it, he's going to experience firsthand. You know, he's going to return in spirit. He's going to experience them firsthand. Like one of the things that I learned yesterday is that all the speculation as to where the temple is going to go, who's going to build the temple, tearing down an existing Muslim shrine, all that kind of stuff, it's irrelevant. Trying to figure out where Mount Zion is, there's no reason to do that. The Mount Zion that exists on a map now, not right. And Zion really isn't a mountain. It's a signpost along the way. And where is the mountain? It's Moriah. But there's three aspects of Moriah that Zion represent. The first is the city of Dod. And that's the first location for Zion, the first signpost on the way, is the city of Dod. Why? Because Dod was camping out with God. This is the place. And then the second explanation of where Zion is, it's 40 feet further up in elevation, just up that same ridgeline, the Temple Mount. And then the third explanation of where Zion is found in Yahshuah, once in the Psalms, but twice in Yahshuah, where Yahweh says, A, I'm going to preserve Zion. And there's only one place. You know, if you look at all of Jerusalem, and the area around central Jerusalem, there's only one place that isn't marred with human construction. The summit of Mount Moriah. The place where Yahweh and Abraham met. The place where Yosha was fulfilled Pesach. It's as it was. I mean, it's just, there's a old scrubby bush and some weeds and some rock and... And but the whole area in the summit of Mount Moriah is not the Temple Mount. It's above it. As a matter of fact, it's 700 steps from it. And the summit of Mount Moriah is exactly 777 meters above sea level.
Wow.
What's exciting about that? That the Hopi Prince ain't on his mountain.
No. No, the Hopi Prince sits somewhere over where the Persian and the Second Temple were. But, you know, the, that temple is not representative of what Yahweh is going to build. Man's not going to build it. Yahweh's going to build it. And he's going to put it where it matters. He's going to put it directly over where the Ark of the Covenant is now. He's going to put it directly over where he filled Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkudim. He's going to put it directly over where he initiated the covenant with Abraham. That's the spot. That's where it's going to be, and he's going to build it. And in the second chapter of Yeshayah, he says it emphatically, and he identifies it directly with Zion, and he says it's the highest summit of my mountain. Well, where's the highest summit of Zion?
Right.
Yeah. It's the very top of Moriah. So it's just the whole thing is fascinating that we've been not only told exactly what's going to happen and where it's going to happen and when it's going to happen and who's going to do it, but the story that explains it, there must be, I mean, there's so many insights in the story that explains it, you almost get overwhelmed sharing oh, wow, that's profound. You know, I was sharing it with Kirk with you earlier today. Like the story of Dode that immediately precedes the announcement of where Zion is, because it says Zion and the city of David and the stronghold of the Yebusi are all the same place. Well, the stronghold of the Yebusi is the ridge. The word for stronghold is ridgeline, elevated position. It's the city of Dode. It's directly below the Temple Mount. And then it says that Zion and the city of Dode and this ridgeline are one and the same. But in the explanation that leads to it, I mean, there's so many powerful insights. Like, you know, how old was Yosha when he started his mission?
30.
How old was Dode when he was anointed king? 30.
I'm going to guess 30.
That's the answer. How old was Yosha when he completed his mission?
33.
How many years did Dode rule and reign in Jerusalem?
I don't know.
33. Okay,
that would have been my guess based on this.
Yeah, how many days was Yosha tested? What's the
40.
What's the period of a time of completion of testing?
40.
40. How many years overall was Dode tested as the ruler of Israel?
40.
Here you go. Yeah, so, you know, every aspect of the story mirrors what...
Yeah, it never changes. I know. It's,
no,
it's
it never
retelling
changes.
Over
okay.
And over and over.
Now,
and over.
When Yahweh asked Dode to be king, you know what he asked, what role he asked Dode to actually play? He didn't say, you know, hey, Dode, I want you to be king. That's not what he said. He said, hey, Dode, I want you to blank my family.
Shepherd my family.
I want you to shepherd my family. What did, what was Yosha?
He was the lamb.
The shepherd. Yeah, the shepherd.
He was
the shepherd. Yeah, absolutely, shepherd. And so Dode was asked to shepherd Yahweh's people. When Dode got in trouble with Yahweh, and Yahweh decided that there had to be a consequence, it was because shepherds lead sheep to water. Shepherds protect their sheep. And rather than doing that, Dode decided that, no, I've got a much better idea here. What we're going to what I'm going to do here is I'm going to send my men to get me a glass of, a cup of water out of a particular spring in Bethlehem that the Philistines were occupying, and I'm going to risk their lives for a sip of water. And then when they brought that sip of water, he dumped it out. And then he spent 9 months trying to assess how many troops he had to do his bidding to protect him. And so at the end of all that, Yahweh says, you know, that is not how you act as a shepherd. I am not pleased. There's going to be a consequence. Now, Larry, how many times have we been told that we are apostates, we are blasphemers because we actually use the title God?
Countless times.
Do you know what the prophet's name was? Because at this point, Dode and Yahweh were not on talking basis.
It was Gad.
Gad, right.
The prophet's name.
Which is the basis of God. Yeah.
And by the way, and the name of one of the tribes of Yisrael, I'm really fed up with the God people because they're missing.
Right.
What Yahweh rails against is being called Lord, not a noun. You know,
right.
I mean,
and, but his prophet that he used to talk to his favorite kid in the entire world was named Gad. This is so off. Anyway, he said, listen, there's got to be a consequence. I asked him to shepherd my sheep. He is a living example. I mean, Goat had a responsibility. You know, he accepted this responsibility to shepherd Yahweh's sheep, and he turned and did exactly the opposite. So Yahweh said it has to be a consequence, and he gave Goat three options. Option number one is there'll be a 7-year famine in Israel. Now, why do you think a 7-year famine would be option number one? What's the purpose of a shepherd?
Well,
to feed sheep, right? To feed the sheep.
Yeah.
Feed the sheep.
Right.
And Goat was not doing the job of a shepherd. So the first option was it'd be a 7-year famine in Israel as a consequence of you failing to be a shepherd. The second aspect of being a shepherd is to protect your sheep, to keep them, you know, to keep the wolves at bay, if you will. So the second option that Yahweh gave Dode, he says, for 3 months, 90 days, you can flee the pursuit of the Philistines, of your foes. So you get 3 months. You've got to flee the pursuit of the Philistines for 3 months. Now, he made it really clear. He said, the Philistines aren't going to kill you. They're not going to get you. All you're going to do is for 3 months, I'm going to have you individually flee the pursuit of the Philistines because, you know, you failed to protect the sheep. That's option number two. Option number three is there'll be a 3-day plague. You know, if you're not taking care of the sheep, if you're not watching sheep, if you're putting the sheep in harm's way, you're not doing the job of the shepherd. It'd be a 3-day plague. Now, if you were the author of the 91st Psalm that knew that Yahweh's promises to protect you were unconditional, if you had been hunted down for a decade by King Sheol who tried to kill you and Yahweh protected you, which one of those three options would you take?
Number two. I'd take the 90-day on the run.
Yeah, but Dode at this point was so off his game. He didn't pick number two. He just said, "I can't even bear the thought of being turned over to the hand of humans." And he said, "So I can't pick number two." He's like Chawa. He added things to what God said. He didn't listen, and he was really off his game. And so he picked option three. 70,000 people, about 1% of Israel, died of a plague. Died of a plague. Now, Dode finally got it and said, "Hey, man, it wasn't their fault. It was my fault." "Yeah, well, why did you pick option number two, idiot? I mean, you wrote the 91st Psalm. And when he said, "Listen, Dode, you can't keep on this with them. It's my fault." And then he said, "Okay, I'll tell you what. I want you to go to the threshing floor of this fellow." And he went there, and I want you to buy from him. And that's where I want you establish an altar, and that'll be the place where we'll make the sacrifices. And that happened to be, that in fact we're told that is on Mount Moriah, just up the hill from where his home was. And he went there, and the first thing he did to the Aruna, the owner of it, is that, "I want to buy it from you." And the guy said, No, I know your God. And I know your relationship with your God. I ain't selling it to you. I'll give it to you. But it's for darn sure I'm not selling to you. If you want to do something, you know, then, you know, make a sacrifice here." And Dode's response was, "No. The sacrifice cost me nothing. where there's an underscore that, you know, the sacrifices cost us nothing. We're eating the animal. It's part of the feast. He said, no, I can't. That's not acceptable. That cost me nothing. And he bought it for 50 shekels of silver. And that is the place where the temple now once stood, of course, at the Dublin Hoofy Print now. But it's quite a story, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is. It is. And it goes to show that Dode got back on his game with that answer. I mean, he got, you know, you got people making sacrifices all the time in the name of religion. You know that. I mean, that's part of the whole religious mindset is what are you sacrificing for God? You know, like he's this sort of sadistic monster up there, you know. And
But, you know, for Dode and Danielson, pal, I want to buy it. I want a fair deal. I don't want to take it from you. I want to buy it because I want it to cost me something here. I want to make an investment and being a shepherd again. That's what Joe basically says. I want to make an investment in being a shepherd again. So I've got some skin in the game. Ever heard that, you know, skin in the game? He just said I want some skin in the game. And, you know, I even thought just a moment ago about my own little tiny world. But to communicate Yahweh's testimony and his insights, I've got skin in the game. You know, I pay for these websites. I pay for the place where the forum is. I've invested money and constantly invest money in tools and in the websites to kind of have skin in the game. You know, Yahweh has no issue if you want to invest in the relationship for the benefit of others. Dode was an example. He made an investment in the relationship. Did he have to make an investment for himself? No. Yahweh said he was perfect. But it certainly helped the rest of us, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That he did this. So, yeah. So, yeah, it's quite a story. And then,
you're a bad number, too.
Yeah, well, you know, what's just so amazing, though, is that for Yahweh to explain precisely where he was crucified, which is, by the way, exactly 700 steps from the Temple Mount to the location. And that, and then talk about the... that he's going to himself conceive, design, and erect on the day that he returns. Upon his return, I think it's going to be done during the 5 days between Yom Kippur and Sukkah. But it's definitely during that period of time. And he says it's going to be in the highest summit of my mountains. And so it is so obvious what he's going to do, where he's going to do it, when he's going to do it. Isn't it amazing that there's so many people with theories they're trying to promote?
Yeah,
you know how many people say that the crucifixion took place where the Roman Catholic moron Constantine's wife or mommy, I've forgotten which one of the two it was, you know, decided that would be the place, and they built an ugly church there, and, you know, it sits on low ground directly west of the temple, having absolutely nothing to do with the ridgeline of Moriah. And,
good.
We'll use this one. You know, and then they have a tomb that's, you know, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, where they have a big church there. Well, I can't promise you for absolute certain that the Garden Tomb is the place. You know how far the Garden Tomb is from the summit?
Let me guess. Maybe. 700 paces or something.
No.
Well,
70.
What? 70. Everything's 70. Yeah, well, I'm just taking a stab here. I've never been there, so I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It's 70 paces from the summit. And you can see there's a beautiful garden there. And then 70 steps in the direction of the Temple Mount is the summit. And directly below the summit is where Yahusha was nailed to the upright pole. And it's directly above where his blood dripped into the Ark of the Covenant, the mercy seat. And it's exactly where Yirmiyah's grotto is to this very day. All right there. All on the high ground of the summit of Mount Moriah.
Yeah, that's one of those things that just, like, make total sense when you stop and think about it. It's like, what's his name? The guy who claimed the founding of the Ark. I can't remember his name now, but...
Ron Wyatt?
Well,
right.
Well, there may, you know, there may be questionability to him, and yeah, you know, okay, but the thing is, like, his conclusion makes sense.
For the
Passover to have been the Ark of the Covenant,
right,
would have had to have been located where his blood could have been spilled on it. It's like,
that's correct.
This is common sense. How come no one's thought of this
right
before?
Yeah, because Yahweh is 100% predictable.
Mm-hmm.
100%
predictable. Well, the thing is, the reason no one's thought of it is Christians are so adverse to recognizing that it was Passover.
Who he is.
They don't want
right
to admit
and
that, so they won't even consider
right
that in their...
Oh, no, and the Ark of the Covenant means nothing to them. It's an Indiana Jones
yeah
crusade. You know, it has
it
nothing to do with their salvation or their relationship with God. But even Ron Wyatt figured out at the end that you even get down to the point where they Malach the tardiness, and it's a Malach, of course, makes perfect sense, is there, and he says, you know, I'm going to lift up these tablets when they enact the Sunday law. And Ron knew that that was a serious problem. That's why he said, you know, all my life I've kept this to myself. I've not never said this because of the controversy associated with this, but... He didn't tell me until the abomination of desolation. He told me until they, I'm going to hold this up when they enact the Sunday law. Because you know what that means?
Mm-hmm.
That the Torahless one is going to impose Christianity. It's the only one with a Sunday law. So that's a really bad thing.
That's pretty, pretty, pretty rough going out a Christian understanding your religion is just associated with the beast. I wow. You know,
I know.
Wow.
Yeah. That the Torahless one that you call the Antichrist is going to impose Christianity.
Yeah. Well, you know, deathbed confessions don't exactly work out. You know, I mean, it's just not.
No, I don't know if Ron Wyatt ever came to know it. The truth, I do know that the last thing that Ron Wyatt wrote is a manuscript that's not even published anymore, but it was a manuscript I got a copy of where he put the pieces together. And he says, by the Ark of the Covenant being here and the blood of Yosha being on it and its location where it is, this means that there was an exact fulfillment of what the Torah instructed, which means that what he was doing there was honoring a promise that was made in the Torah precisely. So, you know, if you read his last writings, he definitely got that part.
And, of course, we read that all over the Torah and the prophets and the Mizmors and Mashals, and it's repeated over and over.
Yes.
I'm the one doing the lifting. I'm the one making
right
the sacrifice. I'm,
right,
wow, you know, over and over
yep
we read it. And it's
over
real
and
clear.
Over.
And that's
yep
one of the other reasons that we know Sheol is such a fraud, because he doesn't point to any of that. I mean, he points to this piece of wood. Is
oh, I know. The cross and his God dying for your sins and for his faith that doesn't explain, but simply says, believe me, and the death of this caricature of God is going to be that which saves you. And it's just... It's pathetic. You know, if once you come to know Yahweh, the thing that you can't stop talking about is the connections. It's how
right
the Torah is manifest in his life. It's
yeah
how Yahweh fulfills through the conditions of the covenant and the benefits of the covenant, and how the conditions of the covenant, while they are requirements, are actually benefits, and how the seven invitations to meet with God, while they are appointments, are all parties. And, you know, you keep on saying, this is all overwhelmingly positive and wholly and completely credible and marvelous. What in the world is the problem with the world rejecting it?
You know, one of the things that I thought was, you know, you talk about making connections, right? And
mm-hmm
and of course you came up with the actual translation of Benjamin. And you did that, you know, really in a very thoughtful but very simple way, where, you know, Raquel is saying, Benoni.
Right.
You know, my son of unrighteousness, my son of idolatry, my son of iniquity, right?
Right.
And then the father went on to name him
Benoni. There's only one person on earth that knows him. Right?
Yeah,
he lived with him for 9 months.
Right.
Yeah.
And,
you know,
and so,
I watched my daughter-in-law, you know, recently through the pregnancy and birth, and I said, you know, you're going to really fall in love with her when she's born. And she says, oh, I'm already in love with her. You know, mothers know their fetuses. They have personalities. They know them. And this mother knew there was something really, really, really disgusting in her womb. Yeah, I mean, what mother would say that kind of thing? And for it to be written down in the midst of Yahweh's Torah, there's only one reason that would be written down for us in the midst of Yahweh's Torah. Something seriously amiss with Benjamin, and of course he became the plague of death. So then this goes on to say, upon their open hands, I want them to actually and continually lift you up, preventing you from stumbling by striking your foot or your stance or your journey of explanation against a stone. And the if you get into Nagap, it's keep you from being tripped up. And Regal, it was speaks of an examination and investigation to gain information so as to teach others to walk. And I think we were talking about this last week, Larry, and I said, you know, you make a lot of bold statements. Has anyone ever tripped you up?
No, and I told you no. Not using Yahweh's words. No, not ever.
No,
I know right where to go. Right.
I did. I was a guest on 3,000 talk radio interviews where you can be assured that on all 3,000 of those, the host did not want to be associated with what I was saying.
Yeah, I'm sure of that. This is the one. That's where I heard you.
Calls from people on a huge percentage of them. And hang on just one second, guys. I want to talk to my son. He came to pick up his daughter. I'll be right back, okay?
Yes. Well, while we got a break, we can talk about this idiot in the chat room, I Am the Universe, who has no interest in listening to the show or coming to know any of us, just wants to tell us all these facts and show how smart he is, when really he's ignorant of everything.
Why do they join
in? Yeah. Kind of a clown. Started out with Bible.
Things like we don't know. Like, oh, the term Christians never used in the Bible. No shit, Sherlock.
Yeah.
The term
we
covered, it's never used. No, it's not, but if you read Shemot 25, there's a very, very detailed description of it, and it's mentioned several times after that. It's never referred to under the name Ark of the Covenant, but it's there. But, you know, he's going to show off how smart he is.
Yeah, he used the term Bible, probably not realizing that holy comes, it was the consort to the Eastern sun god Krishna. She was... And Bible is the sun, of course, taken from the sun goddess Biblia, and also shares the same root with Babylon and Babel, which is confusion. And, of course, tying all that into Halal ben Shikar, which is Satan's name, which is the arrogant son of the morning rising sun, we don't really care what Bibles say. I am the universe. It looks like you are the ass of the universe from where we sat. Because we're not interested in Bibles or your nonsense. How's that?
That was good.
Exactly.
Thanks.
Yeah, you can show off how smart you are, but you don't even realize that Bible's an inappropriate term.
Some are weak and shallow. Yeah. I am.
Fred just
asked
why people don't use their real name in the chat room. And yeah, my personal account is under my real name, but I log in under the Yada account when we do the show for this particular reason right here. So when people like this show up, I can just kick them right out. Because that guy has no interest in listening to anybody, and he's just going to be a distraction for the rest of the show. So no point in having him.
No, just get them out of there.
We had a person that was being an irritant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I am the ass of the universe, I guess. Yeah, I was telling
us
the term Christian isn't in the Bible. And I told him we don't use Bibles here. You know,
yeah.
I mean.
By the way, the term Christian is in the Christian Bible. It's
Christos is an I doctor.
Yeah, it's yeah.
Medical case.
You know, what's interesting is the is it does appear the first time that it's actually written out. It's actually written out Christusians,
yes.
Which is would mean useful implements. And so Christusians would have been a really good translation of the Masaya, the aspect of Yosha. Although, to be fair, even if you came up with Christusians, you would never use it as a title because it was it's a Greek translation of a Hebrew concept. And the other part of it, of course, that is hugely wrong. And, you know, boy, I tell you, I hardly ever use the term Masaya anymore, even though that appears 22 times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. It's a name in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, appears 22 times. And we know that the title HaMashiach never appears.
The
two times that it's considered to be so important is when it ends up, in Daniel, and both of the times in Daniel, it's a adjective depicting a specific kind of messenger, saying that the messenger was prepared and set apart and dedicated to serve as a messenger. So it was a modifier of messenger. The two times it appeared, it was not a title. Never appears as a noun, as a proper noun, or preceded by the definite article. And so the Yosha is so instructive in explaining who he is and what he's doing and who is doing it. You know that personally, I'm a huge fan of Yosha as a identity statement and mission statement, but I'm not. I just really don't see much merit in using Maaseiah, and certainly don't want to use Messiah. And Hamaseiach is not accurate either. But
that's just a way. If you go to any of your confused web pages ran by the Messiantics, you will find HaMashiach, and there will be a guy in a prayer shawl blowing a horn.
Yeah,
and they all pray
G-D and Hashem.
Hashem and Adonai and all this crap. And some of them
talk about the Moedim.
Make an attempt at Yahweh's name, although they never use an O. They always use, they take the light out of his name, I'm sure. And put the U in there, like in Sheol.
I am encouraged. If you go back 15 years ago when I started this, you wouldn't find anybody using anything other than
Yahweh.
That's as good as it got. And then there were a number of us that started using Yahweh. And because of the number of times that we find, Yahudim and that sort of thing, and then, it wasn't until I said, I was really irritated. You know, there's things you do and you just know they're not right. It's just something to chafe at you, and the Yahweh just chafed and chafed and chafed until finally I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through every Hebrew word with the law.
Up as an O when they had a his name in a contracted form, and that's where you really have to go.
There you go.
And because if you're going to hold the name in a contracted form, I mean, we know it wasn't Yub, it was Yob.
Right.
Yub, You know, it was like I say, that's, you know, Barney Rubble speak, you know, and it isn't a mud mikra, it's a moed. I mean, everybody knows.
I was thinking more mush mouth than Barney Rubble.
Yeah, well, I think it's like
and then it became when you realize that that there are two Hebrew words, and perhaps three, that are used so commonly and have been used so commonly for thousands of years. Shalom is the single most common, because every Jew to this day greets each other with shalom. And, you know, I walked by a garden the other day at the Cincinnati Zoo, and it was the Gan Shalom. You know, the Garden of Reconciliation. Now, they take reconciliation, take a part of it, and make it peace. But shalom, there's no one that questions that the sound of the W in shalom is an O. In fact, it's so universal, they take the W out and just leave the O.
Well, yeah, hold your tongue there. Don't say no one. There's a plethora of idiots. I think they're mainly attached to cheap websites of the BHI that run around and on FB. And of course, I block all of them that I see. But they have a Turah, a T-U-R-A-H, and they
really?
Have a Shalom. They have a Shalom.
Wow.
Yeah, Shalom and
Turah.
So they've
decided they're so locked into Yahweh.
Yeah, they're going to rework.
What they're going to do is they're going to. So you know how many words
they're rewriting the whole Paleo-Hebrew alphabet. That's right.
Well, the whole alphabet. I mean, forget even Paleo-Hebrew. They're rewriting the whole alphabet.
Yeah, they are.
No, it has to be Jube, and it's Juel, and oh my goodness.
And it's Yub.
There's one word in Hebrew that teaches us, guides us, directs us.
Eloah.
To everything we need to know about Yahweh, and that's Torah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
that's Torah.
It tells you how to pronounce the as an ah, Torah, the A-H at the end, and the O in Torah is from the law. There isn't a person on the planet that says, I don't know how to pronounce the Y. I mean, the Y is a consonant vowel in many, many, many languages all pronounced the same way.
There's Turah and Shalom out there, and of course these people are you know, basically retarded. They're just retarded people.
Why would you do that?
So,
I mean, I just don't.
Because you're retarded.
Because
somebody
told
you.
I don't get it. Okay, well, Yahweh says, upon the open palm of their hands, I want them to actually lift you up, preventing you from stumbling by striking your foot. Or even a journey of explanation against or exploration against a stone. God wants us to go out, in whatever we do in His work, we're being protected. As a matter of fact, in the previous one, it's just so spectacular because He says this is because His spiritual envoys, His malach, He will instruct and direct concerning you. To actually keep you and watch over you, to guard you in all of your ways. Bah, Kol, Derek. Now, all of your ways would mean that, Larry, if you had a bad day, and, you kind of went off the reservation for a day, do you still have the protection?
Yes.
Yeah,
sure
absolutely.
Do.
Yeah. The protection is not dependent on our behavior. So there are no caveats. It's in all of our ways that we are protected. Now, it goes on to say, and this is something that I was completely, wholly and totally oblivious to, not once but twice. So you will set out to take aim against the horned viper and the venomous serpent who twists and perverts, and the dragon to aggressively stomp upon the creeping nature. Of the fierce lion and the horned and venomous serpent. When I was first asked to expose and condemn Islam, I had no idea that Allah would be Satan. But it's obvious that Allah is Satan. Allah spends all of his time in hell. He spends all of his time doing demonic things. His initial encounter with Muhammad was a demonic experience. Muhammad even said, "I've been demon possessed." It is, and Allahu Akbar is what Satan wants. It's something God never says, but it's what Satan desires to be greater than Yahweh. And so, Allah is Satan. I had no idea that's who I was going to be confronting. And then, 8, 9, 10 years later, I'm asked to expose and condemn Pauline Christianity, and come to find out that the Jesus Christ and the Lord of Pauline Christianity is the same beast.
They're the same guy, turns out, yeah.
Same guy. You know, the spirit that Paul met on the road to Damascus is, in fact, Satan.
You know, when I first heard that, you know, it was I heard you on a radio show explain it, and it was clear, it was true, it was evident. I'm kind of bewildered as to why people can hear that and just instead of being in opposition to the truth, why not embrace the truth? It's just so much easier.
How could you tell the 1.2 billion Muslims that Muhammad, in his first experience with Allah, explained it as demonic and admitted that he had been demon-possessed. And in his farewell sermon, he says, absolutely, it's true. I've had a demon attached to me all of my life. And then you tell a Christian, and there's 2.4 million of those, billion of those.
Billion.
That Paul, in his second letter to the Corinthians, not only tells the same story about going to multiple heavens, as did Muhammad, the seven heavens, but he specifically admits to being demon-possessed. Now, why would you take spiritual advice, if you're a Muslim or a Christian, from a man who admitted that he was demon-possessed? I mean, there's a 0% possibility that makes any sense.
No, of course, and who would? I mean, there's a 0% possibility that Yahweh wrote a Torah and fulfilled a Torah so that Paul could come in and trash the Torah. I mean, what are the odds of this? I mean, really?
It just
goes on. Of course it's zero. And it goes on and on and on. But these people, they either don't care, which I think you call them agnostic when they're in that position, or they're secular humanists and they have no dog in the fight as far as they're concerned, even though they really do if they cared about their life. Or they just want to stand in opposition. And there are people that do want to just stand in opposition. They call them clerics, and they make a living doing that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they make a living at it. To me, this is Yahweh speaking. To me, he is lovingly attached. And so I will keep him safe. And ensure that he survives by keeping him away from danger. I will empower him with the capability to successfully accomplish the mission, while at the same time protecting him by making him inaccessible, because he knows my name. Okay, wow. So that's pretty stunning, fellas.
Can I say something?
Sure.
When between the two shows, I pretended, okay, if I'd heard that the first time, the first question I would ask myself is, because he knows his name, then I would ask myself, well, what's his name?
You were so practical.
Well, I mean, I would if it was put to me this way. So I said, okay, let's just pretend that I'm going back a number of years, and I went to three normal lexicons that just about anybody, any preacher would have, you know, at least.
Strong's, right.
Strong's, I've got, because Strong's, I've got another one called, what's his name? Genesis, the Hebrew Chaldean lexicon.
Oh,
and I went online too, and also have, this guy, I forget his name. Oh, yeah, that's Young's. And I like Young, because, although it doesn't use any of the strong
and
numbers.
And there's English
a lot of information. So I went to those and said, let's just pretend I don't know squat, and I'm trying to find this question. And you find in every one of them, plain as day, Yahe Wahe. You find every one of them in there saying that then they translate it as Lord and Master. Browns and drivers, Braves are also
Lord, Lord and Master.
Wow. Lord and Master. also can be Mistress. And then I kept looking, you know, online, this normal stuff through.
Yahe Wahe means Lord and Master and Mistress.
It's, Lord.
Well, we know the basis is Hiya, which means existence.
Yeah.
So that's
so,
right
and
out
and
the
and some of you find Yahwe, and then, but it's still the definition and all becomes Lord, Master, or Mistress when they have a hey.
What's wrong
with
people?
Mistress.
Yeah.
Mistress.
You know, the
well, that's the queen of heaven, you know, in the Babylonian thing.
Yeah.
So I looked up, so I said, okay, uh-huh. Lord, what does Lord mean? And I looked up, of course, that's Baal. And then I found about 25, at least, words with Baal, Balaam in it. And all of them are describing Babylon and Satan. So at that point, you should throw everything down and say, like I did with your book. For
these people are lying to me.
And say, I've been had, man.
I've been had.
You
here's
know,
the Lockman Foundation.
I mean,
the Lockman Foundation
to any other
published the New American Standard Bible. Now, what the Lockman Foundation claims is that that theirs is the most literal translation. It says that, in fact, here's the foreword. The New American Standard Bible has been produced with the conviction that the words of Scripture, as originally penned in the Hebrew and Greek, were inspired by God. Since they are the eternal Word of God, the Holy Scriptures speak with fresh power to each generation to give wisdom that leads to salvation, that man may serve God to the glory of Christ. The editorial board has a twofold purpose in making this translation: to adhere as closely as possible to the original language of the Holy Scriptures, to make the translation in a fluent and readable style according to current English usage. That's their statement of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here they go. The proper name of God. To professing Christians, whether of conservative or liberal persuasion, the name of God is most significant, and understandably so. It is inconceivable to think of spiritual matters without a proper designation for the supreme deity. Thus, the most common name for deity is God.
It's a name, is it? Oh, wow.
How could you be that stupid?
Of course, Yahweh isn't a religious deity, so we got a problem here.
A translation of the original Elohim. But Elohim isn't a name.
No.
The
Mighty
normal
ones.
Word for Literally. Master and Lord. Now, the normal word for master is Lord. A rendering of Adonai. Now, by the way, do you know how many times that Adonai appears in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms?
Never.
Just in the Torah. In the Torah. How many times does Adon or Adonai appear in the Torah? Zero.
Well, Edom, that appears.
You know what appears in the Torah? Is Edom. And you know what Edom is?
Upright pillar.
Upright pillar.
Right.
Yes.
It's not just an upright pillar. It is an upright pillar. That is the right answer. No. It's the upright pillar that's set into the foundation of the tabernacle that holds the roof up.
Oh, the roof on the tabernacle, of course. Yeah,
it's the pole that enlarges and secures the roof of the tabernacle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not any old, ordinary pole.
it's
the centerpiece of it's the centerpieces of Yahweh's home.
Yeah, well,
it's used to depict its location set into the foundation of the tabernacle, the upright pillar to hold the roof up and to make it secure.
And the rabbis changed that little. They put a little.
Took it from Edon, and they rewrote it Adon, and then they put the Y at the end of it to make it My Lord. Because Adonai isn't Lord. Adon would be Lord. Edon is upright pillar of the tabernacle. And Adonai is My Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and every time there's add-on is written, they're talking about a person. They're talking about a person.
Right.
They're never
right.
talking
right.
about
right.
Noah.
Now,
whatever.
There is yet another name. Now, they've just given two titles. One applies to God, one does not apply to God. There is yet another name which is particularly assigned to God, which are now, you couldn't have a name that's assigned to a name. If God was a name, they've just contradicted themselves, haven't they?
Mm-hmm.
So the name assigned to God, that means that God is a title.
Right.
It's like saying there's a name assigned to the President of the United States. There was a name assigned to Caesar. So by saying, writing it this way, they're already admitting that they know that God is a title, not a name.
Right.
As his special or proper name. That is the four letters, YHWH. See Exodus 3 and Isaiah 42:8. Why not just write Isaiah's name correctly? Yashayah or Yashayahu. By the way, Isaiah, Yashayah, and Yashayahu. The first time that in the Dead Sea Scrolls that Yashayahu introduces his name, it's Yashayahu. The second time he announces his name, it's Yashayah. So both are acceptable. It says, now this name has not been pronounced by the Jews because of their reverence for the great sacredness of the divine name. Now, if you thought that something was special, it was so special, nothing was more special to you than your name, Larry. Would you make sure
hide
no one
it from
said
the
it?
World? Sure,
yeah,
I'd hide
it
from the world. That'd be my first thought. Yeah, I'll make sure nobody knows it.
Well, right. The thing that's the most important to you, isn't that the thing you're going to treasure the most?
When you were a little boy or you had a daughter and she falls in love in school, don't you write the little boy's name all over her books and all over
absolutely.
Her?
Absolutely. Yeah. So,
I mean
this is that I am so stupid I can't think what this right. Therefore, it was consistently pronounced by the and translated Lord. How do you pronounce YHWH?
Lord.
I mean, you tell me, how do you... It's not pronounced.
It's,
I mean, the people that wrote this are either stupid.
Stupid.
Yeah, the editorial board of the Lachman Foundation, who printed the New American Standard Bible, are either so stupid that they ought not write anything down and publish it because they're making fools of themselves, or they are being purposefully and deliberately deceptive by putting together a case that is so obviously false that they think that the audience that they're selling this rubbish to is too stupid to figure it out. So they go on. It was pronounced and translated Lord. Lord is not a translation of Yahweh. It is not a pronunciation.
Translation.
Well, I mean, these people are just liars. I mean, they're just liars. I mean, that's all. They're straight up evil liars.
Right.
Yeah, that's
fraud.
I mean, there's
frauds.
Nothing more to it than that.
It goes on to say, the only exception to this translation of YHWH is when it occurs in the immediate proximity to the word Lord. That is Adonai. Adonai is not the word Lord. Adonai means my Lord. In that case, it is regularly translated God in order to avoid confusion. So they just said Elohim is the word that they're translating God. Now they know it's Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh there, Yahweh's name, but it's translated God even though it's a different word. To avoid confusion. It is known that for many years, YHWH has been translated or transliterated as Yahweh. No complete certainty attaches to this pronunciation. Now, that part's true.
And however, no religious significance either, right?
Hell, wait, they're just, there is no certainty that it's attached to the pronunciation Yahweh, because the hey is essentially never pronounced eh. An ending hey is ah. And, you know, the verb that explains Yahweh's name as he gave it to Moshe is Haya. So there's no question that the hey is an ah, both the first one and the second one, not just the first one. And they didn't pronounce the W. They just left it as if it wasn't a vowel. However, it is felt by many who are in touch with the laity in our churches that this name conveys no religious or spiritual overtones. Well, it's for damn sure it doesn't convey any religious overtones. that part is true. And if you're dealing, and if your spirit is the spirit of Paul, then it doesn't convey any spiritual overtones either. But not in the way they make it. And devotional background. So there's no devotional background. Now, what did y'all say? To me, he is lovingly attached, and I will keep him safe and ensure that he survives by keeping him away from danger. I will empower him with the capability to successfully accomplish his mission while at the same time protecting him by making him inaccessible because he attaches no significance whatsoever to my name. Oh, no, I didn't read that right. Because he actually knows my name. It is strange. They're saying Yahweh. Strange. It is strange. It is uncommon. It is without sufficient religious and devotional background. No amount of scholarly debate can overcome this deficiency. Hence, it was decided to avoid the use of this name in the translation proper. Go to hell.
And they will.
And they will. That's a direct violation of the third statement, Yahweh etched in stone, of which he said, how much forgiveness is there in association with the
third statement? I forget the word all of a sudden. None.
There's
you,
none.
You will not do
low, low. It's low showa. If he asks you, low nasha, which is do not lift up, do not advance, do not tolerate, do not accept, do not promote.
Right.
Yeah. Anything that negates Shoah.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that negates my name, Yahweh. I will not forgive.
Loha Shoah, I think it's the...
Yeah. Lo Yasha, I will not forgive. So I will not forgive anyone who accepts, promotes, publishes, tolerates, advances the negation of my name.
Yeah.
So for all of those morons out there that think, oh boy, so you think you know Yahweh's name and big deal. You know, God doesn't care what you call him so long as you call him. Dead wrong.
And big deal.
You cannot know Yahweh if you don't know his name. And I would say exactly the same thing about Yahusha. If you do not know his name, you do not know him.
You don't want to spend anything about him.
No. You are dealing with what God twice in the Proverbs calls a caricature. He blames Paul of creating a caricature. You know, a caricature is what Islam does to Abraham, what Islam does to Isaac, what Islam does to Daud, is what Islam does to Yahusha. It creates a caricature. You know, it's like a Walt Disney character that bears some semblance of the same name, but everything else about them has changed. And Jesus is a caricature, bearing no resemblance whatsoever to Yahusha. Now, I didn't know how to pronounce Yahweh's name at the time.
But you know how to spell it.
I knew how to spell it, but I didn't know how to pronounce it.
Good start, yeah.
And so what this demonstrates is that God has seen our future. And so God could make the statement that I'm going to protect him because he knows my name before I knew his name. Because from God's point of view, if you come to know his name, that means that you know his name. because he's not stuck as we are in the ordinary flow of time. He could see the me then as opposed to the me now as opposed to the me then. That's a powerful understanding in the way that Yahweh sees us. He calls out to me, so I respond and I answer him. Now, if you're calling out to the Lord, he ain't going to answer. The Lord may answer, but God certainly not.
Yeah, he always going to answer.
If you're saying, in the Lord's name we pray, amen, you know, you may get a blip from HaSatan as well. But it's for damn sure Yahweh's not listening. And he's not going to respond.
No, that just negated every Christian prayer, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the interesting thing, too, is that that in Yahshayah, Yahweh actually says, listen, I raised them, I lifted them up, I did everything I could for them, and they rejected me. And then he goes on to say that, you know, that they make a whole lot of rabbinic prayers. And they're really big into their long and great rabbinic prayers. I ain't listening. I don't hear them. So, no, God responds to those who know his name. There's not a single rabbi out there that uses his name. Moreover, I will be together with him against the vexing competition. I will equip him and I will prepare him. And I will value and honor him as being especially significant and important, promoting him. Now, when I told Yahweh I need three things, this psalm has already emphasized that I'm going to do. The first thing was protect my home. You know, if you ask God for the things he's already written in stone that he's going to do, you know, you have a tendency to get him to agree to it. It was a heck of a negotiation on my part. You know, I asked him for three things that he had promised to do 2,700 years earlier. He's got to look at it, you idiot. but you know, one was protect my family, and he specifically says, I'm going to protect your home. That was the first one before we started tonight. And then the other thing I said is, you know, I'm not going to do this alone. I'm not qualified, so if we're going to do it, we're going to do it together. Well, here's saying, I'm going to empower you. Yeah, I'm going to empower you against what is a vexing competition, against an aggravating rival, against an annoying and adversarial antagonist. And I'm going to equip you and prepare you. Okay, well, that sure works. And then the third thing I said is, you know, I'm a marketing guy. If we're going to do this, what I want is the one thing that I'm decent at, I don't want to turn back and rely on. Because if I start relying on the one thing I think I can do pretty well, which is to market
yourself,
then I'm likely to become self-sufficient in something else. So just to make certain that we have an agreement here, I will do nothing to market this message. You know, somebody wants to create a cover. Great. I will tell them that. I really appreciate that. Thank you for creating the cover, Kirk.
Hey.
You know, somebody wants to create a Facebook site and talk to people.
Welcome.
Larry, thank you for doing that.
Not a problem.
If Jerry McLaughlin wants to promote the message, thank you for doing that. But I'm not going to solicit anyone. That was part of the job. You know, Richard wants to create a site to share this testimony and comment on it. Wonderful. But it's his choice. Am I thrilled everybody's doing it? Absolutely. But it's, you know, I didn't want to promote it. And so what is God saying here? I will value and honor him as being especially significant and important promoting him. Okay. That's what, yeah, and by the way, you know, I've gone back into first person here. I'm talking about this from a very self-centric way because that's how this reads to me. But that's exactly how it should read to everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, Doe Down Under, my good friend in the land of Kiwi and I were talking about this today. He says, I read it as being applying directly to me and directly to my family. It does. It's exactly, and I know you guys do as well, and that's why everybody should read this as personal. It's a promise between them and Yahweh. Engage in what Yahweh wants done, and all these promises pertain, including the one that says, I'm going to view you as being especially significant. That's what fathers do with their children. I will provide, fully satisfying and completely fulfilling his needs, with a long length of days. And he will find, delight in, and be shown with my salvation, with my Yahusha. I didn't ask for a long length of days. But, you know, guys, I think each of us, JB, you're going to be a likely exception. You're going to be harvested, you and Patty, and your new daughter, young. And there's a number of people who are listening to this program that are going to be harvested young. My friend Dode, I just mentioned down there in New Zealand, we're about the same age. Roy, who provided the insights we talked about earlier today, he's a little older. Yeah, but we're all about the same age. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to, in all likelihood, make it pretty darn close to 2026, 2027 when the Teruah harvest occurs. And when you think in our case, how many people hate us? I mean, the thousands upon thousands of death threats. And yet we're going to be satisfied with long days, a long length of days. Now, there is a time when I would have said, no, thank you. I just as soon check out now.
Yeah.
Being seven-dimensional sounds a whole lot more grand than having to wallow in the muck of the religious and political idiots out there. That's not my view anymore.
No, this is pretty
like
fun.
This is really fun. I love it. Yeah.
There's definitely fulfillment in exposing truths and making connections and showing
right.
them to other people. I mean, I've never been directly given a mission, as far as I know, you know, and I'm sure I would if I knew. But if I was given a direct mission, I would just do it.
I think you're just doing it. I think what happened in your case is that rather than having a specific, I want you to go do this, and I was only given the mission because I didn't know who Yahweh was at the time. I didn't know him. I would come to know him, but I didn't know him. Now, in your case, you came to know him first, and then you embraced your mission. So you just simply
I knew a little bit about him. I knew that.
Yeah,
I knew the world was a lie, and I
yeah.
knew he was telling
yeah.
the truth. That much I
yeah.
could
Yeah, and same thing with JB and with Kirk. Yahweh told us what he wants us to do. You guys just did it. You know, I didn't have to be told to go and expose and condemn Paul. I didn't have to be told that. I didn't have to be told, you know, I'd really like you to translate and comment on Proverbs 6 and 7, and then let's go in and go to Yahshiyah. You don't have to be told, because we have been told. You know, why do you need a that's one of the things that really pisses me off about, excuse the language, about Christianity, where they're constantly saying, no, I'm seeking God's will for my life. He told you his will. Why would I ask his God, what would you want me to do when he's told me what he wants me to do? Which is the same thing.
That's one of the things that's always struck me about people. They claim to know God, a lot of them, and yet... or else they claim to be spiritual when they're physical beings. I don't know how they're spiritual, but they're always looking for their path, their mission. Well, there's only one path, and there's only one mission.
That's correct.
Now, the mission that we have does have two.
I mean, it has multiple aspects of the mission. I mean, the mission is to expose and condemn religion and politics and things that are in opposition to God. And the mission is to share Yahweh's truth in a way that resonates with people. That's the mission. It's the mission that Yosha engaged in. And then there are offshoots of that mission, which are the shepherding aspect of, you know, feed the sheep, lead the sheep to water. You know, to the largest extent possible, although we're all in the same family, but, you know, act like a family member, you know, engage, do the right thing. You know, so there are a lot of things that we can do that are part of being part of the family, but I don't know how anybody in their right mind could say, God, I want to know your will for my life.
No, that would be an insult.
It's an insult to him. God, he's told us so many times and so many different ways. Now, the last part is he will find delight in and be shown with my salvation, with my Yosha. Once I came to know Yahweh, now I'm going to tell you that when I was a Christian, I was begging to be saved all the time. Once I came to know Yahweh, never once asked to be saved. Never
Isn't
once.
Isn't that amazing how much time we spend on that?
Yeah, how much time we spend on it, and now it's...
I already saved you, but don't forget to save me.
I don't think I'm alone here, because I think you guys have the same view, is that salvation doesn't even cross my mind.
No.
What's
being saved about it? I mean,
right. I'm looking forward to continuing in an even greater way to do what we're doing. Walking with Yah, talking with Yah, listening to Yah, learning from Yah, exploring with Yah, sharing with Yah's family. Engaging with Yah's family, learning, you know, growing.
Just look at the inside of the last couple of years. I mean, wow.
You know, and the great release on the whole thing is knowing that because the Torah was written in such a way that absolves us of our darkness, that obliterates it, we don't even have to worry about it. Am I doing the right thing? Don't even have to worry about it. Because Yahweh is constantly bathing us in his perfect light. So we look, you know, I might view myself as dented and flawed, and I think that's helpful to have that view. Mm-hmm. Not the way Yahweh sees me. Not the way he sees any of us.
Well, it is
so,
you don't have to be very good at this. He said you have to engage in it.
Yeah, you don't have to be very good at it, but you do have to engage in it. The right answer is just everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's reinforced in so many different ways. And it's just, like, why did anybody wonder that Yosha would begin his ministry at 30? Why did anyone wonder that he would be 33 when it was over? You know, why would anybody wonder that he would be tested 40 days and 40 nights? It's all there in the depiction of Dode's reign. You know, so God is extraordinarily clear in all of this. Now, that is the 91st Psalm. Easily the most important thing in my personal life, because it was the confidence that I had a genuine conversation with God, and that he was going to do as he promised, and he did exactly as he said, and it led to where we are today. But, you know, as I was sharing the first chapter of Observations for Our Time, which is a review of Proverbs 6. And we start in Proverbs 6 because a member of the family that we just, I don't know about you, Larry, but the rest of us kind of like this guy. William the Elder. You're actually the guy that's
probably my best friend.
I'm giving you a friend. Yeah, I know, because you spend the most time with him. I only know him for the voice through the telephone and from an email. But he sent an email. And it was, and I'm not very good, and I'm going to apologize right now. I am not very good now at responding to emails. I respond to maybe 1 in 20 emails. And there's a reason I'm doing it, and it doesn't make it right. I'm just telling you this is the reality, so I hope that you cut me some slack and don't get too mad at me. But I am finding that this return to translating and learning and sharing is very rewarding, and I'm just fixated on it. I get up in the morning, and this is what I do, and I do it all day long. And then and to go into emails and move away from it is right now is not as much fun, or I don't even think is useful right now, as focusing on translating passages that we hadn't considered before and coming up with insights relative to them. So this was during a time where I was reading William's email. He was concerned about who the whore was in the midst of Proverbs 6. And so we've gone through it. We've gone through Proverbs 6 now twice. So that's what led to it. And come to find out, Proverbs 6 was exposing and condemning Paul, the author of Christianity, the plague of death. And so Roy said, you know, I think that as obvious as it is that it was condemning Paul, that he said, you know, I think what I think I'm going to go do here is I'm going to look at other Proverbs to see if there's other Proverbs that also expose and condemn Paul. And he sent me a note and he says, Proverbs 7 is just an extension of Proverbs 6. I think you're going to want to translate it. It is specific on condemning Paul. Condemns him by name. And so the next chapter, I call it the Whore of Religion. It is devoted entirely to exposing and condemning Pauline Christianity. And it begins, my son, literally and continually observe my words. My answers and promises, my emir. It's one of the Hebrew words for word. You know, debar is the primary Hebrew word for word. When you get to this one, emir, you're dealing with a shade of words which is answers and promises. Especially my instructions for participating in the relationship, the mitzvah. Electing to continually store them up within you as a genuine treasure. Now, even before he condemns Pauline Christianity, he's telling you what the antidote is. Before you even go there, this is your preparation. Because if you do that, the job is going to be easy. And you're not going to be pulled into that mud. That's a pretty good way to start, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So our Heavenly Father's advice to his children is literally and continually observe Yahweh's words, his answers and his promises, especially his instructions and the conditions for participating in the relationship, the mitzvah, electing to continually store them up within you as a genuine treasure. When Yahweh returns, what's the first thing he's going to do on behalf of his children?
Put the Torah in our hearts.
Right. So what Yahweh is saying is, that's what I'm going to do. So since I think that's a really good idea, and since because I'm telling you I'm going to do it, would it be reasonable for you to the best of your ability, do this as well? Do this in advance?
Absolutely.
That's what he's saying right here. Follow my example. Even though my example is in the future, not in my future, but in your future, follow my example. I'm going to write my Torah in your heart. So what might you want to do?
Start writing.
Start writing, right? You know, and really, since the heart is the seat of judgment, the place you process information, the place where your ambitions and your desires and your judgment all are the seat of all of those things, that's where he wants you to treasure his Torah, because you do that, it's going to completely influence everything you say, everything you do, everything you know. It'll change your entire attitude, your perspective.
what's this? Yeah.
So, a powerful way to start. So I guess we can, next week, we will dive into the seventh proverb. It's going to lead us directly to a condemnation of Paul and Pauline Christianity, because that is the ultimate plague of death. And then from there, we're going to dive into the first chapter of Yeshayahu. There's a chapter's already written and prepared on that. And then the second chapter, which is just so... it's so uplifting of what Yahweh pronouncing, that there is light at the end of this tunnel. Yeah, you're in a very dark place, humanity. But that's not where the story ends.
No.
And as Yahweh talking about building his home and of us going there, it's just a marvelous journey through the first two chapters of Yeshayahu. So
observation, that's where we're at. Is that where you want to start on
Proverbs 7?
We want to finish.
Unless you guys have more you want to talk about on Psalm 91, I just say we go right to Proverbs 7.
I mean, do we need to wrap it up on the observation show as well, or just let it go there and send them to this?
I think send them to this.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, because there's been every place that is offering the recordings of those shows is offering both.
Okay. Okay, I'm sure Richard will say that in his little information thing there.
Yeah. So. Yep. So you guys, are you guys about the process of Pesach or getting close to it?
Well, I finished last week.
Okay, you guys did it last week?
I did.
Well,
yeah.
I'm doing it April 21st is when I'm doing it.
Okay.
So.
All right. And I did it a while ago now. I asked for a special dispensation, which Yahweh was happy to accommodate. So for the first time ever, I was able to enjoy every aspect. I guess the second time now, I was able to enjoy Pesach with my son down in Texas. So we began it early just because we wanted the father son experience of doing it together. So I mine was some time ago. But I would tell you it was the single most enjoyable Pesach that I've ever had, and I did not celebrate it on the right day. I mean, I was absolutely unequivocally early. But never felt better about it. Never enjoyed it more.
Let me ask you two little quick questions.
Sure.
This week, which section is the one we're starting on? What's the number?
This is Proverbs 7:1. It's from chapter 5, The Whore of Religion, and Observations for Our Time.
Okay.
So we're going to start in Yeshayahu, you say? Or
No. We're Psalm, Proverbs 7.
Proverbs 7, okay. Yeah.
Proverbs
7.
Proverbs 7.
Talks about Paul.
Yeah.
Just describes the individual out there whoring around, bringing it in.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing to me that we can show these things to people and they just disregard them.
Correct. Yeah.
Just disregard them.
But, it's still, if you look at it, Yahweh's example, Yahweh spends as much time talking about what's good for us as he does what's bad for us. I have to assume that the best example for us to follow is Yahweh's. And if Yahweh spends as much time talking about what's bad as he does what's good, we need to continue to expose and condemn Pauline Christianity. But, I find now that by exposing Pauline Christianity and talking about the antidote, that even the exposure is part of that whole process of eliminating the rubbish, of getting the stench of it off of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just so direct. I mean, when you start tying in Rachel and Benjamin and he who is lowly and little, I mean, that's a very important find. Understanding that Paulos means he who is lowly and little.
Yeah.
And then finding lowly and little all over the place when he's describing
right.
the person that's trashing the planet with religion.
Right.
I mean, what do people think that is? Can't they, 2 plus 2 equals four.
100% of the time. Yeah.
But it doesn't in most people's world. That's
yeah,
what
Shaul is the plague of death, and Shaul is the name of the founder of the Christian religion. The Christian religion is the plague of death.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty straight up.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to tell you that in Proverbs 7, there was one of the most challenging passages that I've ever tried to translate.
Really?
Because, yeah, and it's because Yahweh shares an experience in first person where the first person speaker in the proverb is not Yahweh. The horror.
No, I know that. I know I caught that. Yeah, it's Satan speaking about laying out the incense.
Yeah,
blankets.
Because he's going through this whole explanation of how Satan lures people
operates.
Into religion. Satan operates. And so there's like four or five lines where it's Satan speaking in first person. The first time I went through it, I said, that's what this is. And I translated it all from Satan's perspective.
Isn't that the way we speak sarcastically, too? Isn't it really?
Yeah.
I mean, when we're conversational, I say, hey, I have an idea. Let's all go out there and support politics and religion, you know, and here's how we'll do it. And then paint this picture, and you're all laughing, going, Rustler,
and that's exactly
again.
What Yahweh does. And the first time I got it and I translated it that way, then I said, oh, my goodness, how could I do that? This is a proverb. Proverbs, Yahweh speaking in first person. And I went back, and so I redid the whole thing in Yahweh's voice straight, and I said, oh, man, I can't leave it at this because there's too many just little flaws. You know, like a counterfeit bill, they always catch the counterfeit because it's really close, but there's a couple of things here, there, and everywhere that said that's not quite right. And with every statement, there was something that wasn't quite right when I tried to put it back into Yahweh's voice. And so I said, you know, I'm going to go ahead and present it both ways, and I'm going to show what's not right in Yahweh's voice, and then say, here's what it really says. But it's the adversary's voice showing how Satan lures us into to religion. Yeah, it's really fascinating the way that the whore is presented in Proverbs 7. So if Liam the Elevator Man is the reason for Proverbs 6, which is where the new series starts, it's Roy the Scientist that is the reason for
number 7.
Number 7.
By the way, that was quite a find to be able to realize that. Most people would just never cross that line. You understand that. Now it was worse.
Yeah, I know. In fact, it was Roy that helped me with it because, you know, I went and I translated from the horse point of view, and then I retranslated, just like I said, from Yahweh's point of view, and I sent it to Roy, and it's just eating me up alive because I know, oh, God, this is not right. And then I go back, and I'm in the midst of redoing the whole thing. It took me like 3 days to get it all back right again. And in the middle of it, I get a letter from Roy that says, no.
New updates over to us, guys.
He just says, no. There is no way this is in Yahweh's voice. And he said, for these reasons, by the time I received it, I'd already retranslated it, but we came to the same conclusion at the same time. And then the reason I turned to Yashaya is just selfishly, one reason is selfish, the other reason is really not. I wanted absolute proof that the whore, Babylon, and Satan and Paul, Shaul, were all the same thing. I wanted a text that takes us from religion is what's wrong, the religion is a whore, the whore is associated with Babylon, Babylon is associated with Satan. Okay, I wanted all of those connections. We're making those connections, but I've made those connections based on understanding, not based upon Yahweh specifically walking through, and I knew that the first 14 chapters of Yashaya progressively from religion is revolting to me, to the religion is a whore, to the whore is Satan, and that Satan and Babylon are one and the same. And so that was half the reason I turned to Yashayah, and what'll be, you know, months and months and months of translating. But the other reason
is, but these are important connections, and obviously Yahweh spends an inordinate amount of time on those connections.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like it's like the you know, the alcoholic kid doesn't do anything about it until he knows he's got a problem.
Right.
And that's the world, that's the problem, actually, that the world has, is that they're walking around in a delusional state. I can tell you, and I'll bet all of us could agree, that the minute you found out that there's only one purpose for anybody in life, as we talked about earlier, you know, sharing the truth, knowing the truth, coming to the truth, embracing the truth, and giving that truth to others, you got light. I mean, you know, I ran around my life politically, militaristically, willing to make a sacrifice. Sacrifice doesn't even come into the picture anymore. That lightened my load about 1,000,000 pounds right there.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but it's light now. I don't really have a load to carry.
I don't have a load anymore. I don't have a burden. That's why if something is a little bit laborious, I just don't go there.
There you go.
I do the stuff.
I mean, I have to keep running this company no matter what, which is a little laborious.
Well,
you've got to
make a living sometimes.
But you know, I'm pretty well taken care of.
Yeah.
I'm well taken care of, so I don't have a problem. But I just sit here and I just think to myself, I used to, you know, and think of that confusion. Can you guys remember that confusion? What's my purpose? What am I supposed to be doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what's my purpose in life?
Wasn't it hard?
Yes. Yeah, it was.
Kirk?
Particularly when you're being attacked on all sides and you've got people that are nipping at your heels and slandering you and if
you were
people are attacking and you're so vulnerable.
I don't even want to go there with you.
God, it was just
you were pathetic. If I hate to laugh at you. You got to laugh now a little bit. Yeah. You know, you were just in a pathetic position. You ran around the world trying to convince some of the biggest leaders there were how ridiculous they were, and they all thumbed their nose at you.
That's correct.
Face to face.
That's
That's huge.
Yeah, that's correct. But,
I know
now I don't care what anybody thinks.
I don't care.
Yeah,
that's why I'm laughing about it. If I thought it
was... I used to care. I don't care anymore. But I think that's part of growing with Yahweh, as you go from caring to... you care about different things. I still care greatly about...
You know, it's like going from knowing to understanding, as you say. I thought about that today. You know, the more we understand, the less we really appreciate, well, I don't know if we don't appreciate knowledge, as it were, but knowledge for the sake of knowledge doesn't mean much to me anymore. If there's no understanding attached to it, what does it really matter?
Yeah.
You know,
I only like knowledge.
I'm having someone in the chat room right now.
Yeah, you know, the thing like chasing down what does Zion represent, that Zion and Moriah are one and the same, and that there's three places in Moriah that matter, and that Zion is the signs that were posted along that way that direct us not only to the path but the right way to go on the path, that's knowledge that leads to understanding.
Right. Yeah, it is. All these things that lead to understanding, and the more we hear them over and over, the better. I mean, as you teach things, as you pass things on to people, you gain understandings as well. I mean, it just goes on and on. I mean, that's the way things work. They've always worked that way. And knowing that I don't really have a lot to do in this life other than that's important. Is nice to me. I mean, it's really a light load. It really is.
Yeah. In fact, I'm not even sure it is a load.
The sacrifice has already been made.
I'm not pulling this thing. I'm kind of riding in it. we're not pulling the wagon. We're riding in the wagon. In fact, not only are we riding in the wagon, we got the A number one seat.
Yeah, there you go. And I'm hearing you. But I'm just saying, my life got light. You know, the headaches went away. You know, when you think you have some big mission, and you're, you know, in this mission, I mean, now, shy of you, JB, the rest of us did believe in God. Is that right, Kirk? You believe
in
God.
Well, I knew he was in there somewhere. Yeah. I just couldn't find him.
Right. And I did, too, and I know Craig did, too.
Yeah.
And so we're out there in our everyday life sort of trying to do the godly thing, you know, which is so stupid, you know, now that I look back, you know. I don't have to. That, you know, that was the freedom in the Torah that Doe talked about. It's the ultimate freedom. I can be a number one screw-up, and I'm okay. Now I know that. You know,
and here even Doe, when he had this, he got everything wrong, and he is sending the sheep to fetch him a cup of water, and then he is counting because they're going to be defending the shepherd, and he just got it all backwards, and it's embarrassing to Yahweh because Yahweh chose him, and Yahweh, and he had a great relationship, and he asked him to shepherd his sheep, so it's embarrassing to God, and God says, you know, there's got to be a consequence of this, and he gives him, he says, what about a 90-day timeout? Just a 90-day timeout. You know, you'll have to duck here and there and flee the bad guys for 90 days. But in the process, maybe you'll do a little thinking about, maybe, you know, the job is to be a shepherd. And this idiot chooses a plague and 70,000 people die?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, he really had it back-asswards, that's for sure.
Oh, man. But doesn't that make you feel
good?
You
know, that's why people act like Joe made one mistake.
The guy that's a hell of a lot smarter than you and I, and still he screwed up?
Yeah, well, you know, and again, you know, you get the people, the religious people out there. He made one mistake. He wanted a man's wife, and
Joe was a constant screw-up. 70,000 people.
Yeah, I know.
By this,
it's not knocking a glass of milk off the table, is it?
Yeah, you know, I had to read this section like eight times this morning as I was trying to translate it because Yahweh was really upset. And I was saying, Yahweh killed 70,000 people. He had a Moloch do it, but Moloch killed 70,000 people. You know, what percentage of the population of that is? Why would God do that? And I kept on reading it. I mean, he said, you know, there's only two things in this story. One is he sent his guys to waste 9 months to count the number of people wielding swords. And he had some guys risk death, killed a bunch of people to get him a glass of water that he dumped out on the ground. And I said, so, wait a minute. What's the issue with all of that? And then you go, oh, wow, put it together, idiot.
Yeah, and then you got 70,000 dead again, and we have seven again. You know, I mean, so Yahweh never wastes the time to point at that seven.
But the whole purpose here was, I've asked you to be a shepherd. That's the role that I'm going to take. If the shepherd doesn't do their job, people are going to die. If the shepherd's job is to provide water, you know, he leads me to the still waters. Even Dode wrote that. Well, now his Dode is sending out his sheep to get him water. There has to be a consequence when you invert God's plan. When you, rather than being part of the family and shepherding the family, Dode had the family serving him.
No. Yeah, he had it backwards.
Yeah, he got it backwards.
This is just the kind of guy Dode could be. And you know, it's the kind of guy everybody can be. And
well,
you
know, can you imagine, you know, your songs and the melody to your songs, the creator of the universe is actually working through you to create this testimony, and he has specifically picked you to not only be king of his chosen people, but giving you this marvelous new city, you become the most famous person in the world. Every battle you fight, you win. You know, everything that you touch turns to gold. Wouldn't you, after a while, and God saying, you know, I'm going to build my whole entire kingdom from you, the Savior is going to come from you, you know, I think after a while most of us would say, man, my stuff doesn't stink. I must be pretty hot.
No, that's what happens with us, isn't it? I mean, that's what happens. I mean, we get full of ourselves, and that's what happened with Doden, and he was just a guy. And that's what I say, you know, when people sit out and they think they're going to, I don't know, go out there every day and do the godly thing, you know. No, they're not. No, they're not.
No.
Nobody does, you know. I mean, PR firms and movies about heroes have that, but that's not the reality of the world. It's not the reality of people. And therefore, it's nice to know that it's the onus isn't on me as far as what I'm capable of doing.
Right. It's just like if somebody thanks you for your Facebook outreach and for all the people that have come to know Yahweh because of it. You know, the bottom line is you're doing what you enjoy doing.
I've met a lot of great people that way, for one thing.
That's right, yeah.
And, you know, and it's not, well, I met you that way. I mean, really, you and I were what? You know, we'd email back and forth, but until I called in on Shattering Myths one day, by the way, because I felt sorry for you having to read for 3 hours, and then Kirk took a spot for the same reason. I mean, he cannot be reading like this all day long. You can't do it. I mean, it's just it's like punishment, you know. So
I think you just quit.
I had to jump in there just so I could be the comedy relief or something.
Yeah, I know.
You know, give you a little bit of a break so it could become more conversational. That's a very hard thing to read 3 hours a day.
By the way, no, we'd really enjoy it. So we'd open our books and go around with you and make notes in the columns. And
I recall that. Used to Larry from FB. I remember that.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I've really met some great people because of Yahweh, because of this.
Yeah.
It's a great thing to me. It's a great thing. I even know your buddy Dode over in the Kiwi there. I mean, he's a good guy. He really a lot of fish stories from this guy. But
he's taking on City Hall. You know, he's on the radio now talking with one of those controversial radio programs, and he's giving them hell, you know. So he was
it's a wonderful family. Yeah.
He's a good guy. You know, there's certain people you just look at, you just see their picture, and you like them. Be honest,
one of them. Yeah, he's
just straight up. Looks like a hell of a
guy. Yeah, I know. He's just one of them. Yeah, I am. The moment, the first email from him, I said, this is a guy that I like. Yeah, the way that Yahweh called the family and chose who gets to participate, we're going to have an amazing time in eternity. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting kind of fun version of competition as we needle each other and go to each other's corner of the universe and have a glorious time.
Well, you know, practical jokes and all nine yards. I mean, think of some outrageous jokes I want to do. But, I have to say, I mean, it's just, you know, it takes a certain kind of person to go ahead and embrace the truth. And then once you do it, you go, wow, man, was I stupid? You know, I'm one of these guys that God was everywhere. That's called magic, guys. An individual can't be everywhere at once. You know,
the fact that a seven-dimensional construct can't be anywhere. In a six-dimensional universe.
I know. All these things come into play.
You know, and I always wonder, it's always troublesome to me, that, Yahweh used his own energy to create the universe. Can you imagine how much that would have to deplete Yahweh to come up with the energy necessary to create a 100 billion galaxies with 100 billion stars? And then old Roy explains, you know, hey, stupid.
Well, from his
every time you go
like
one dimension to the next dimension, there's an infinite increase in power and capability. So it doesn't take anything away from a four-dimensional construct to create a three-dimensional universe. It just takes nothing away
all
from a seven-dimensional individual to create a six-dimensional universe.
Finish us at all.
No, not at all. There's no.
No, and I agree with that, but it takes. From our vantage point, it takes brilliance and power. And
but,
and
some of our two-dimensional universes might look a little better than others. You know, mine's going to be
another
six figures,
and Kirk's artistry.
Well,
Kirk, do you know any surrealistic painters, by the way?
Pardon?
I'm sorry? Have you ever heard of Dan Schilling? He's a friend of mine.
No. Was he like a Salvador Dali type?
Well, no, he was much better. He in fact, thought that Dali was very weak, and by looking at his technique, I believe. Dan, actually, I met him years ago. He invited me to a party with Clint Eastwood. I couldn't go. It really bummed me out at the time. It was way back. But Dan, he was the number one selling artist out of Corey Gallery over in San Francisco for a number of years, and he was... his techniques were just amazing. I remember
what
back
was
in the name
of Dan
Schilling.
Spell it.
Dan Schilling.
Well,
you mean like a Schilling?
Schilling.
Let me see. I'll just pull him up here real quick.
I'll look him up. I'll come close. I put Dan Schilling artist. He'll show up.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, he. I remember he had a multi-millionaire PR man. Schilling, S-C-H-I-L-L-I-N-G. He had a multimillionaire PR guy named Noah out of West Palm Beach here that wanted to make him the number one selling surrealistic painter in the world. And he had done a show in London. This was must have been in about 78 or something like that, where he had limited edition prints. I think it was 300 of each, and it was on. It was 10 different prints, and they sold for $1,200 a piece. And the show was sold out before he, you know, opened.
Huh?
So he made some serious money doing it. But he said he'd starve for, you know, 25 years, too. But
yeah, but
I'm
looking here is a picture that he has. It's got a Ferrari. It's got the rotary engine and an old P-51 hanging out, and then some interesting characters in it. So it's a very...
Very colorful, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm looking at that exact picture right here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was quite an artist. He's got a lot of stuff a lot better than that, to be honest with you. But from what I saw,
yeah,
I just wondered if
you selling that piece.
I might have something. I don't know the names, but I recognize the art, so I'll Google him and find it.
Yeah, he's got one here in the clouds of a guy standing, and then there's fish and butterflies all in the...
Yeah, butterflies is one of his big themes, that's for sure. Yeah, yeah, that's Dan.
Yeah.
At the time, what was Salvador Dali, and who was the other guy? Who was the more recent?
It was the guy, Magritte.
My Little Village. Mark Chagall. Mark Chagall. And his goal was to knock Mark Chagall off, and he his work was a lot better than Chagall's. So I never understood the whole Chagall thing anyway. I thought it was kind of weak.
Yeah, I did send you one little email. You ought to open up this picture of your favorite animal that I drew you. I sent it to Roy, and he sent back...
Oh, this would be a platypus, then.
And he gave me the whole scientific jargon on what it's called and where the name comes from, just like Roy would do.
Oh, okay.
So, take a look.
Yeah, all right. I don't see it here. I've got... you've already sent it to me?
Yeah, I sent about a week ago. I'll send you
a week ago.
Or Terry,
so something that I must have missed. And did you send it to the yada yada or the other email?
The other email.
Well, there it is. From Kirk. There it is. Okay, in a picture. Okay. Oh, here we go. Oh, there we go. You know, yeah. I've always spoken highly of you, Mr. Platypus. That is a funny looking creature, isn't it? It doesn't know if it wants to be a beaver or a duck.
Well,
it's
going to
be an otter.
you know, so.
Yeah, that's a really, I like that one. It says copyright.
Example of interspecies breeding.
Is that 76 or is that 16?
No, back in the 70s, I did syndication work for newspapers, for newspaper syndications, and I used to do ink work and write stories and stuff, and little snippets, not big stuff, you know, and advertising art and all that sort of thing. I was in engraving business as well, so I did a lot of ink work coming out because there were newspapers, people would buy it. You know, had a lot of market. So that, but I was digging up my stuff the other day and ran across them and I said, here we go.
Oh, so you drew this in 76. You know, Yada, I've always spoken highly of you, Mr. Platypus. Thank you, Kirk. I'll make it my screensaver. I'm still going to question you about the platypus.
Yeah, well.
All right, fellas.
Enjoyed it.
Fun
way to finish
the
next week.
Okay.
Hey, JB.
All right.
See you later.
Take care.
And Larry.
All right. Yeah, good night.
Night, y'all.
Good night. Bye.